Welcome to the Eternal ROI Podcast, where we share the real stories of workplace transformation. And now, here are your hosts, Will Stewart and Chris Patton.
Welcome to the Eternal ROI Podcast. So glad to have everybody listening in, watching along. So glad to have you here. I'm joined as always by Chris Patton, CEO of His Way at Work. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Will. I appreciate you. Sure. Thank you for letting me be here today.
Absolutely.
This is going to be a fun one, I can tell you that. I will tell you why it's going to be fun in a minute, but I first want to introduce our guest. His name is Mark White, and Mark is CEO of Steve White Auto Group in Greenville, South Carolina. Mark, glad to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
So, obviously, the reason this is going to be more fun is this is a car dealer. One of the most underrated, unappreciated professions in the whole world.
It's true. It's scientifically proven.
I'm telling you. I'm excited. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, and for everybody that doesn't know, that was you in a former life.
In a former life, I got to do that. And it was a blast. So I can't wait to hear some of the stories he's got.
Does it ever leave you? Does that car dealer, you know, fever ever go away?
So far it hasn't.
Yeah.
So,
it gets in your blood.
It does get in your blood.
Yeah, and we see people leave the industry, and then sometimes they come back.
Yeah, I bet. So for you, it started as a family business, right? Like you came from your dad?
It did, yeah. Yeah, my dad started the business, and it does get in your blood. I didn't plan to go in the car business, but it happened.
Yeah. What were your plans before?
Well, you know, I grew up in Western North Carolina, and went to school at Chapel Hill, and my dad always said, you know, I don't want you to go in the car business. I had two older brothers that had gone in the car business, but he was like, I don't think I can do a third. And so I said, well, my buddies are going to go to law school. Maybe that's what I should do. So I studied political science and history. I was not a good student. And so my senior year, dad called me, and he was like, hey, you thought about going in the car business? And I said, well, no, you said you didn't want me to. And he was like, well, you know, I didn't want you to think that you had that waiting for you. He said you probably would have goofed off more than you did already. And he's like, but I bought this dealership down in Greenville, South Carolina, and I kind of had you in mind to run it. And I was like, oh, wow. And I'd sold cars and worked at the dealership, but never thought of it as a career. But I said, well, let me think about it. And I very briefly thought about it, and I said, well, this is a great opportunity. I'm going to go for it. So that's kind of how I got in the business.
How many years ago was that?
18 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So I started running a car dealership when I was 22, and I wouldn't recommend that. But
I was 23,
and
extra year didn't help a whole lot.
Right. Yeah, I always say, you know, I feel sorry for the people that had to work for me back then because I just didn't know what I was doing. I had a great mentor of my dad, and he didn't seem at all concerned about it. He may have been concerned, but he was just kind of excited about it. He said, this is kind of my last old age attempt at a car dealership, and I think that he saw, you know, potential in me, and just, you know, kind of poured into me in a way that, you know, allowed that to happen a lot quicker for you and I guess, than most people.
Yeah, I agree. Got some parallels we've definitely been talking on sidelines about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, love that.
So the dealership today, for those who may not know who you are, for the three people in Greenville who aren't familiar with you, tell us about the dealership, kind of, you know, what you guys are doing and all about that.
Yeah, so we have Volkswagen and Audi franchises here in Greenville. We have about 90 employees, two facilities, and really we've kind of been doing the same thing for the last 18 years. A lot of dealers, you know, kind of get into a growth mode as far as acquiring and expanding and that kind of thing. We've taken a little different approach in terms of just really trying to grow, you know, what we had. And it's, you know, when I first started at the dealership in 2002, we had like 20-something employees, and we were probably doing like 20-something million in sales. And then last year, you know, we did about $95 million in sales, and it's the same two franchises. Now, Greenville has, you know, obviously had a lot of growth, and And, you know, the good Lord's just looked over us through this whole thing. But it's been really fun to be a part of, you know, growth like that.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. You know, they say that three of the least trusted professions in the industry, I'm sure you're going to know, like, y'all have heard this before, right? Mm-hmm. Being car dealers is, you know, in order of worst to better is members of Congress, then car sales people, and then business executives. So it's like, you know,
double whammy on
you. Yeah, that's right.
So it's well represented in this group, right?
Yeah, if I'd gotten my law degree,
you would have fallen.
That's right.
In respectability.
Yeah.
You try to do your dealership differently, you know, so it's not doing the old ways of, you know, maybe getting as far as you can and you know, cheating people every chance you get kind of thing. What was the emphasis for you behind that to have a dealership that was different?
Well, I think, you know, the reputation is probably earned.
No question earned.
So I think, you know, we have to be real about that. And somewhere along the way, I realized that for a lot of people, going to a car dealership was just like going to the dentist. I mean, they just really dreaded, especially car shopping, you know, just that whole process. And so I think, you know, where we really, I mean, when I got into the business, I didn't want to be a typical car dealer's son. I knew that. I knew this was a great opportunity, and I wanted to be respected. I wanted, you know, there's a term for, you know, what Chris and I are, which is PhD. Papa had a dealership. and so that was always in the back of my head of like, I don't want to be that. You know, I want to do well with this, and so. I think, you know, we really got focused on our people probably more than anything of like, you know, how do we get the best quality people? And early on, you know, that wasn't necessarily the case. I mean, we, you know, when you're a small dealership, it's just harder to recruit. It's harder to get the best quality people. And so you kind of get the second or third or fourth tier, you know, and then as you grow and you get to where, you know, you've got a big enough scale to pay people well and to have a good quality of life and time off and things like that, then you attract a better quality people. But I think over the years we kind of worked on that. And that's really, you know, I think if you take care of your people, the end result is that they just are better at taking care of customers. I mean, yeah, that's kind of been my approach.
So when you think about caring about your people, you even do that differently, right? So what does it look like? When did you make a shift, or was there a mark in a point in time where you made a shift from caring about your people to really going that extra level? And what does it look like to you today? How do you approach that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think for me, you know, from age 22, probably until, you know, my late 30s, I really had a very, I was very bottom line driven. Like, you know, in my peer group of other Volkswagen dealers, I wanted to be number one. And number one meant your numbers were the best. And so every little percentage and way I could tweak a car dealership, that was really my goal. And, you know, I wanted to take good care of my people and I wanted to be successful, but it was really about having the best numbers. And so, and I think, you know, and we did really well with that. Like, you know, and I think it was because I started so young, I just didn't know any better. So there was an idea that another dealer in another market would tell me I would just do it. Because I hadn't had enough time in the business to be cynical, you know. I'm like, oh, that probably worked for us, you know. And a lot of times it did because we just didn't know any better. So, you know, well, a big event that happened in my life was my dad died 3 years ago, and it was sudden. And he was my business partner and my mentor, and so it was just like one day he was there, and we would talk on the phone every day, and then the next day he's gone. And so we went through a transition, you know, over the next year or so where, you know, obviously not having him there and in the process of kind of buying my mom out of the business and what does that look like. And so for, you know, about a year, we were just kind of in limbo. But we got all that done, and I made a decision to bring somebody else into the business in terms of like a VP type of role. And I did that because I felt like, you know, I kind of had done all I could do in the sense of like, you know, we've grown this thing, but it's just sort of like flat now, and maybe we need a fresh perspective and we need some help. And I'd like to be able to you know, do some other things within the business that I can't do if I'm running it day to day. So I hired a guy named Brian Scully to come on board, and this was about a year and a half ago. And then I also joined a group at church, at my church, of business leaders. And I turned 40. This all happened last year.
That's a recipe,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah. So, you know, and when I hired Brian, I said, look, I'm probably going through a midlife crisis. Like, you should know that. Like, my wife says I'm going through a midlife crisis. But I think this could be a good opportunity for both of us. So when I brought Brian in, it gave me a chance to just start to reflect on things. I was recommended to read a book called Halftime by Bob Buford. And I read that, you know, kind of early last year before I turned 40. And it just put me on a whole trajectory of what do we want to do different in the second half of my life and you know, as our business matures. And so that's when, you know, I got connected with His Way at Work, and it was a big part of kind of facilitating this whole change of, instead of being numbers-driven, we really have started putting a lot more emphasis on really taking care of our people and showing Christ's love, you know, for our employees.
That's fantastic. So specific to those efforts you're doing where you are amping up your efforts to care for, love on them, to display God's love, and it's fairly early, right? So you're about a year into that, roughly. Yeah. What kind of results are you seeing? What are some things that you're seeing that you didn't expect or have surprised you? Or just give us some ideas there.
Yeah, well, I could tell you some stories.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, so we kicked off our caring team early this year. You know, obviously, we had no idea what was coming, you know, with COVID. And frankly, I kind of wondered what needs would be there. And I think because our business has been fairly stable, the caring team hasn't really been caring for people a lot with COVID-related needs. So that hasn't been a big thing. But just life happening, we had an employee who tragically lost her daughter in a car accident in February. 21 years old, and just, you know, one of those things where it just happened, and we had just kicked off our caring team, and it was so neat to kind of see them jump into action. You know, we had just so many efforts to, you know, to raise money to help pay for expenses and to have a, you know, good showing at the funeral and to just, you know, bring food and just love on her. In a way that certainly I could not have done, even with my best efforts to try to facilitate that, because we had this whole team of people in all these different departments that were all trying to accomplish a common goal. And so I feel like, and I hope that really touched her. She says that it did. And so that's a, you know, just an example of like a recent event. We had a salesperson recently who had to have his leg amputated, and he was a tree guy in his former career, and he'd fallen out of a tree, and he'd had like 17 surgeries on this leg, and they finally just said, "We got to take it off." And he has had the best attitude and approach to that. I'm just shocked at how much of it was almost a relief for him, but just his good approach to it. But again, the caring team, you know, getting together, you know, they're paying his utility bills for 90 days, and they're just doing all these things, bringing meals, same kind of stuff, where it's just caring on him, loving on him in a way that I could not dream. He wrote me a card last week, and what I loved about the card was that he was like, "Thank you, Mark, but really thank you for the people that you have that work for you," which is what that was really encouraging for me to hear. that he was just thankful for his coworkers.
So let me ask you a question on that. Did you change people?
No. Same people.
Same people.
Yeah.
So what you've basically done in caring for and loving on them is giving them an opportunity to do the same for others. They're rising to that. Others are seeing it. The people didn't change, but the people changed.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And you know, I think one thing I have seen with coronavirus is that, it is putting a level of stress on our people that they've never seen before, that I've never seen before, you know. And so I have seen, like, some behaviors that have been surprising to me that have not really been a thing in the past. I think it's just this high stress level is causing people to lash out and do things they wouldn't normally do. And so I think it's more important than ever in the sense of, like, defining our core values and being able to talk about those, and then having a group of people that are caring for our employees, because I feel like whatever sort of issues that we've seen, they would be a lot worse if it weren't for having this culture that we had created and now we've cultivated, especially over the past year.
Yeah. Wow, that's fantastic.
I mean, having a process in place is so important. I mean, what do you think would have happened if you hadn't had, you know, the caring team together? You know, I'm sure you would have done something. I mean, you would have, but would the impact have been the same?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because we would have done something, and we have done something, but it would be like the office staff trying to do the right thing. You know, like, maybe we should take them a meal. You know, maybe we should do something, you know. And so there's just not the horsepower behind it, to use a car term. I mean, it's just, you know, the level, the things that you can get done when you've got a group of people all communicating and working together and that have a common goal, I think.
And a budget.
What's that?
And
the budget. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And they you know, that's what's cool is that, you know, we've given them the budget for the year, and they're like, well, we don't want to not use any of Mark's money. I mean, like, let's go spend it, you know, which is exactly what we want to have done. So you're right. I mean, I think just the way that we've been able to take care of people is at a much higher level than it could be without the caring team.
Sure. Yeah. Switching subjects, you were talking about, you know, finding a group of mentors with your church. You know, that's such an important thing, having a community around you. And it seems like, you know, if you're a CEO, that's the loneliest position in the company.
Yeah.
There's nobody you can turn to. I mean, you were fortunate to have your dad, which was incredible, you know, and now you're faced with, you know, finding that group. You know, how did you do that? What was the process, the steps you took to find a team that you could kind of build around you of mentors?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say, truthfully, they found me in this case. I got a phone call one day from one of the leaders at our church, and he said, hey, we're thinking about forming this group of, business owners and, CEOs that go to our church, and would you like to be a part of it? And I was like, boy, the timing on this just couldn't be any better, because all the things I had shared earlier with this transition in my life and kind of like this feeling of, you know, what's next. But I think, for me, with the car dealership world, I had a great group of mentors and folks that could teach me the car business and how to excel at that.
The nuts and bolts of the business, right?
Right. What I didn't have was a group of Christians that, maybe were in the business world but had nothing to do with the car business, but could talk about, you know, a Christian perspective on kind of how to run a business successfully and how, you know, what do you do in the second half, so to speak? I mean, a lot of these guys, 50s, 60s, I mean, they maybe face similar questions to what I have, and they had great advice. So, you've talked about C12. I mean, there's a lot of great options, all over the place of ways to connect with other people and mentors.
Yeah, I think the availability of options are out there if we want to find them.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a book I was reading. It's talking about warning signs of a leader that's in danger. And one of them is they're a lone wolf. You know, they have no accountability. They have no network other than, you know, work, business. And it's a recipe for disaster, for sure. What do you think people are resistant to that? What do you think people are resistant to having a mentorship and a network around them?
Oh, I think it's a cultural thing. I mean, I think we're Americans and we want to do it ourselves. And I mean, that's just,
a little cowboy.
Yeah. And right. We don't want to be, you know, we don't want to come under authority, you know. I mean, that's the way I am. Yeah. Like, I'd rather not be told what to do if I could avoid that. But it's so healthy to do so, to have, you know, someone else. And I think a sounding board, which, you know, my dad was always that for me. Sure. He was a great sounding board. And so I knew when I lost that I needed someone else in my life or a group of people in my life to kind of like say, well, you know, what do you think about this? I mean, what would you do, you know, with this situation? So I think it's so important. And I mean, you know, our church has really been big on community. And I think in the business world, community is really important as well. I mean, you know, not living life alone and not running your business alone.
Yeah, for sure. So you have a beautiful family. You have two cute kids, which star in your commercials from time to time.
They're not as cute as they used to be. They're 8 and 11 now.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I tell them, I'm like, you know, they see that commercial over there with the little ones that are 4 and 5. Like, they're way cuter than y'all.
It's time to do some reruns, right?
Yeah, that's right.
How do you balance that between work and between family and keep that, you know, somehow reasonable? Because I know the car dealer life can be 24/7.
Consuming.
Yeah, it can just completely consume you.
Well, I think it's different now than it was when I was younger. There's a lot of flexibility, you know, with my schedule and things like that. And I love being with my family. I love spending time with them. And so it, for some reason, that has not been a real hard thing for me to pull away from the dealership and be with them. I don't know, you know, I love what I do. I love work, but I also enjoy being with them. And so that has not been too hard of a thing for me for some reason.
That's good. I'm glad it comes naturally.
Have you found a tie between that and the quality of people you have?
Yeah, and that's what I guess what I was alluding to is when I was younger, it was a lot harder to leave the business because I felt like that it was more dependent on me and that decisions needed to be made. As we've grown and we've got people in there that I trust and that are very capable, and there's less and less that needs to go through me. And so they tell me to leave. You know, they're like, you just get on out here, we'll sell more cars. So that's the reality is that we've got like really good people that I trust, to, you know, if I'm not there, they're still doing a great job.
Yeah.
How do you hire? Like, that's a big, you know, nebulous thing, you know, finding, if you want to change your culture for your company, it starts with the leadership, obviously, and setting up, you know, these ground rules and a clear vision and all that. But then you also have to have people that want to jump on board, you know, right, and share that vision. How do you do that? What are some steps you guys take?
Well, you know, one guideline that I heard a long time ago that we use, and I think it's a great, you know, sort of lens to look through a prospective hire is, and this works for really any position, is would you like to have this person over for dinner at your house? And I found that has really been a great thing to think about because you might look at somebody and say, well, that person could probably sell cars. But then if you say, would I like to have him over for dinner at my house tonight? You know, like, would that be okay? And you're like, no, I don't think that's the same. And so I think that's, you know, one little, you know, way that we've looked at it. But I think now that we have defined, you know, what our core values are and what our culture is, and 2 years ago I couldn't have told you that.
Sure.
You know, I could kind of give you some ideas of what, you know, things were important to us, but we certainly didn't have it in writing and we didn't talk about it. So now, you know, we certainly are using that in interviews and asking questions about, you know, here are our core values. I mean, what do you think about this one? Yeah. How does that line up with your perspective? And it's a great conversation. I was interviewing a really key position over the weekend on the phone, and I shared with him about what we've been doing with the caring team and just this idea of showing Christ's love to our employees and it's very important for me that we say, hey, this is my faith. It doesn't have to be your faith, mm-hmm. but this is something that's important to me. And I was excited because he lit up, and he was like, wow, that's amazing. And I'm looking for a place like that. And so, if I had had that same conversation with somebody else, it might have gone differently.
Sure.
And it might have been like, whoa, I don't know, that might be a little intense for me. So I think being able to have, for not just me, but for all of our managers that are interviewing people and recruiting and hiring, just thinking about how does this person match up with what we're saying our core values are, and if it's not a good fit, let's go ahead and take care of that now rather than a month or two from now when we find out that was a bad hire.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is powerful too, being able to articulate that those values, that mission statement, so that everybody can be on the same page. It's not just stuck in your head somewhere, it's actually something that can be written down and spoken about.
So if it does happen and you make a bad hire, you slip, you like somebody, they don't quite fit, but man, I just can't not see giving them a chance, and it doesn't work out. How do you guys handle that? How do you terminate employment in a way that honors God?
It's a good question too. You guys have great questions. I don't know that I've got a great answer for that. I wouldn't say that we're doing it, in a way that is real unique. For me personally, I think that being able to think about the next step for that person and where, what's my best advice for you, and what's my perspective on why this was not a good fit, and sharing that in an open and honest way rather than just saying, let's be real cautious about the situation and not really tell them what happened here.
Because that's the safe play.
Yeah.
The safe play is we're going a different direction. You're not a part of it.
Right. That's probably what we've done a lot in the past, is just kind of being like, all right, let's just be done with this person and move on. I do think we've gotten better at being courageous, in these conversations and in the exit of, hey, here's something that may help you in your next role. Either the car business is not for you, or this dealership's not for you, or whatever that looks like. But I think just trying to think about that person's next move and how we can help them with that.
Sure. It's a big deal.
Marketing and advertising, that's another thing that's big. For like, if you have a Christian business, you want to make sure you represent
especially your company. In the car business.
Right. Yeah,
it's exactly. A big deal.
There's all these gotchas that can be, and even things that maybe the layman doesn't understand that they need to understand. Mm-hmm. And there's some like, dishonesty in not selling. How do you guys avoid that? What are there steps that you take to just kind of make sure that when the customer comes in, they have a very clear picture? I know you guys do it.
Well, it is interesting because it seems like I find things out real quick because, my dad's name is on the building, and so pretty much they think, well, he's the guy that I need to talk to. And so, we recently made just a little small policy change with our Audi dealership. And, I mean, it felt like it was just hours later I was getting an email from a customer saying, why did you change this? I love this. And you guys, really messed this up. And so I think that it is really nice in the sense of like hearing, really quick feedback, whether it's an online review or they shoot me an email. It doesn't feel like there's this wall as much as there might be like in a corporate-owned dealership, mm-hmm. to where there's like, I don't even know who to tell about that. I think when your name's on the building, then there is sort of this idea that like, well, I can go directly to the owner if I've got an issue. But I think, with our advertising, like an interesting part of our business is this idea of selling used cars that don't have a warranty. And we used to be like, we don't want to do that. That's too much hassle. We don't want to have people upset with us because they bought a car and it broke down and all that. Well, we've kind of changed our perspective on that probably the last 4 or 5 years, because we do feel like that there are people that have a certain amount of money to spend, and they want a car, and they want a good car. And so what we now do is we offer them these cars that, you know, are not like super expensive. They're budget used cars, but we encourage them to have the car inspected and to, you know, basically to, we're like, listen, there's probably some stuff wrong with this car. And some people like to fix cars themselves. Some people like to take it to their mechanic because they charge less than what we charge. And here it is, and we encourage you to go get it checked out. And it's been very interesting to me how you know, little heat we've gotten from this side of the business, because I do feel like we communicate so, you know, clearly. You're
helping them go in eyes wide open.
Yes, they know kind of what they're getting into. And then even when, you know, things don't go well and they come back in 30 days and they're like, hey, the air conditioning broke. And we're like, okay, well, I mean, we did kind of say that they probably would have some problems, but you know what? We'll split that cost with you. And it's amazing how, you know, that, because they did have the expectation that this was a car that might need some work, but just saying, hey, we're gonna pay for half of that. Or if you don't want the car anymore, we'll just take it back from you and give your money back. Giving them those options, I think, is kind of a good example of like what car dealers either didn't want to have anything to do with in the past, or they would just say, you're on your own, and not really tell them what they were getting into.
So a conversation I had the other day with another business owner was around, and they were in manufacturing, is around warranty and basically defective parts, that kind of thing. And they were shifting their warranty policy to a much more open and accepting of those claims, and easier to approve and just and get the refunds or whatever it was. You're doing something similar in that approach. The initial hesitation to do that is we're going to lose money. This is going to cost us more to do that. But I'm hearing you say, and I heard them say, it's actually the reverse that's happening. So touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be when everybody kind of goes into the transaction understanding of what the situation is, and that, you know, in this case, they're really responsible for the repairs that are needed. It's just, I mean, we might have, you know, if we sell 20 or 30 of these cars a month, we might have one person come back and say, I'm not really happy with how this turned out, you know, like, but very few of them are saying, you guys are bums, like, you are awful, and I don't ever want to do business with you again. It's more of like, hey, I know that I bought this car and it was like this, you know, we had this agreement, but I'm still kind of disappointed. That's mostly been what we've gotten, which is, I think, to me, has been a success.
But on the flip side, you've picked up a segment of business that you did not have before that's fairly profitable to you, right?
Yeah. And they were buying cars down the street at Joe's Used Car Lot.
Where they're not getting that.
Where, you know, it's not, they don't have a backing of a dealership potentially that can and will take care of them, you know.
Yeah,
it's amazing. No matter what business you're in the relationship business.
Yeah,
you know, it's all about just treating someone well and thinking about the long term, not the short term deal, for sure. So, as we bring things to a close, appreciate this has been incredible. Just picking your brain and appreciate your honesty and generosity with sharing these answers. A couple quick fire questions for you. What's a time management hack that you employ? Something that allows you to get more out of the day? Is there anything?
Well, I'm big on email. Yeah. And so, you know, for me, just kind of keeping up with tasks and that kind of thing, I do it all through email. And so if I want to get something done, I'll send myself an email. And then I put it in my starred box in my email, and that's my to-do list. And I just work my way through it like that. And I've shared that with a lot of our folks. And I think either they're kissing up to me or they say it works.
Combination.
But yeah. That's one little, you know, I guess you call that a hack.
Yeah.
That's good. I like it. You should, you know, go on tour with that. Let that be your thing.
Yeah. I'm getting so old now. My hack is that I send myself an email.
Oh, that's good, though. If it works for you, it works for you.
Yeah.
So what's the top resource or a book that you'd recommend for those that are listening and watching, you know, CEOs to read? I know you referenced, is it Halftime?
Yeah, that book, you know, especially for folks that are kind of, you know, midway through their life. I mean, I think it can happen in your, you know, late 30s into your 40s. I think that's a great book. I love audiobooks, but I'm not like a voracious reader. I read a lot, just, you know, through social media and that sort of thing. But you know, I'm not the guy to ask for if you want to know like the top 10 books to go read.
Right.
Maybe in my second half, I'll do
second
better.
Second half,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
So. And what's one piece of advice you wish you had been given 10 years ago?
Well, I think what I've, you know, these adjustments that I've made at halftime, I really wish we had started these sooner, because the people that we could have impacted, you know, our employees, and then the way they go on and take care of their customers and their interactions with their families, just, you know, the way that that we could have, you know, taken care of them, because, you know, our business has been profitable. It was not a matter of like we just didn't have the money to do stuff like that. It was just that we didn't know to do it. Mm-hmm. And having a resource like His Way Work to be able to like hold your hand and walk you through that. If I had known about that, and I think you had, you know, kind of a similar experience.
Similar story,
yeah. And so I wish I had started that sort of thing sooner. That's just my genuine answer of like, you know, it breaks my heart in a way that we didn't, but I'm glad now that we are.
Yeah, well, you started when you found out about it.
That's right.
That's
true.
Important, you know.
Yeah.
Moving on the information that you have.
Yeah.
What do you think the takeaway is from today? The thing that people who are listening and watching should take away from our discussion.
Well, I think that you know, for me, I mean, you know, what I really have learned the last couple of years is that, you know, it's great to take care of your people and it's great to make money in business. But how can you do that as a believer? How can you do that at a higher level? I mean, how can you, you know, this idea that your faith is personal, but it's not private. How can you live out your faith in your business and make it a real true ministry opportunity? Because I think I kind of thought that I was doing ministry by providing great jobs for folks and giving them a good livelihood, and they kind of knew I was a Christian, but publicly professing that and then showing people what, you know, what that could look like in terms of, like, you know, this infrastructure that we've created to take care of people and the funding that we put behind it. I think it's truly like a no-brainer, and it's the most exciting thing that I've done in my career is really taking our business to the next level in this way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That's incredible.
Well done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's good. I'm so excited for those in your organization because I think it's only going to get better.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. So the last question is the hardest one. If someone wants to buy a Volkswagen or an Audi, where do they go? How do they find you?
Just come see me.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We go to our website, stevewhitevw.com or audigreenville.com.
Yeah. Awesome. You guys will hook them right up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Well, thanks, Mark.
Thank y'all. This is wonderful.
Yeah. Appreciate you coming.
That's good. All right. So for everybody that's been watching, listening, thanks so much. You've reached the end. I appreciate you sticking with us all the way through. And if you want to learn more about Mark, there's notes in the show notes with links and everything that we discussed. And please be sure to subscribe. We're on podcasts, any podcast service that you like. We're there. And, you know, if you're listening on podcasts, we're also live streaming on Facebook. So if you want to watch us talk about this instead of just listen to us, we have Faces for Radio.
Yes, we do.
You'll agree. So until next time, thanks so much, everyone. Bye.